This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Doe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
So, let's think about the night sky for March 2010. Well, of course, as the sun sets, you have a lovely skyscape to the south, with Orion just a little bit to the west of south. Below to its left is the very bright star Sirius in Canis Major, and up to its left are the heavenly twins, Gemini. High overhead is Auriga, with the bright star, somewhat yellowish, Capella. But as the night moves on, other constellations become apparent. Particularly Leo the Lion is rising at about 9 o'clock in the evening and seen over in the west. And I'll come back to that when we talk about some of the highlights. And getting high overhead is Ursa Majoris, Ursa Major, the Great Bear, with that very nice asterism, we might call it the plough. The Americans call it the Big Dipper, after the ladle that the farmer's wife used to use to ladle out the soup at lunchtime to the farmhands. So let's have a look at the planets this month. And in fact, it's quite a good month for planets, because in principle, if you take the beginning and the end of the month, you can see all of the ones we usually talk about. Now, Jupiter passed behind the sun on the 28th of February. It reappears, however, in the pre-dawn sky at the very end of the month. And on the very last day of March, it'll rise about 50 minutes before the sun. And if you've got a pair of binoculars and a very good low eastern horizon, you might just pick it up at magnitude -2. But to be honest, it's probably best to wait a month or two when it's a bit higher in the sky before it gets light. Well, Saturn is now coming to perhaps the best few months of the year to see it. It's rising by 8 p.m. on the 1st of March. In fact, that's along with a full moon. And it can be seen at magnitude plus 0.6. That's not too as bright as it sometimes is, because, of course, the rings are almost edge on, as we shall see. And you can see it for much of the night. It reaches opposition, and that's when it's roughly due south at midnight. The Earth is between the sun and Saturn. And that is on March the 21st, and so it rises about sunset. And if you think about that, seeing that's the spring equinox, then that's probably what you might expect. The angular size of this, because it's a long way away, stays pretty constant. That's at 19.5 arc seconds. And the extent of the rings is 44 arc seconds, not far off the angular size of Jupiter. The ring system's very close to edge on. In fact, it's 4 degrees at the beginning of the month. It has been less than that, but it's actually going to reduce again because of the positions of Saturn and the Earth in their paths around the Sun. And it's going to drop to 3 degrees by the end of the month, and by mid-April, it'll be down to just 1.7 degrees. So the rings are getting thinner at the present time, but then they will gradually begin to open out for the next many years. And in fact, it's the first time in 15 years that we've been able to see the northern side of the rings. So that's something to be looking out for in the next month or so. Well, Mercury passes behind the sun on the 14th of March, but then, because it goes round quite quickly, reappears again in the twilight sky along with Venus during the last week of March. And I'll come back to that in one of the highlights, but you might just spot it with binoculars on the 22nd, about 20 minutes after sunset. You've got to have a pretty good low western horizon. It'll then be about 9 degrees below Venus and just 3 degrees above the horizon, but I'll come back to Mercury a little bit later on. Well, you can hardly fail to spot Mars in the sky. It's fairly high in the southeast after sunset. It went through opposition at the end of January. It'll be well up in the south and highest in the sky, about 8:30 in the evening. Sadly, the disk is getting smaller. It drops from 12 to 9 arc seconds during the month. But under good seeing conditions, a small telescope should still maybe see some of the more prominent features and perhaps the polar cap. On December the 20th last year, when it was in Leo, it began what is called its retrograde motion. It moved back out of Leo and into Cancer, where it is now. It continues to move westwards into Cancer until March the 8th, and then it resumes its eastern track across the skies. So that so-called retrograde motion is because the Earth has been overtaking Mars on the inside track. Well, I mentioned Venus. During March, it becomes prominent in the evening sky as it climbs ever higher in the sky. It has a magnitude of about minus 3.9. And that actually, any time you see Venus, it's pretty well at minus 3.9 or minus 4. And that's because the apparent area we see stays pretty constant. When it's near to us and hence large, there's only a thin crescent that's illuminated. On the other hand, when it's on the far side of the Sun and relatively small in angular size, most of the disk is illuminated. So the apparent brightness stays pretty constant. An angular size at the moment of about 10 arc seconds, because it's well over the far side of the Sun. Okay, so there are the planets. What about some highlights of the month? Well, I mentioned Leo. If you look towards Leo, perhaps about 10 o'clock at night, maybe 9 o'clock towards the end of March, you get really quite a nice skyscape. Leo's in the centre of the field. Down to the lower left of Venus, sort of below the hind legs, you'll see a bright object, and that's Saturn, which is in the constellation of Virgo. And up to the right, you'll see Mars, which is in the constellation of Cancer, the crab. However, last month I mentioned that you could actually spot the brightest of the asteroids, Vesta. Not the largest, but the brightest. The largest is, in fact, Ceres. And on the 16th of February, I had my astronomy class in Wimslow nearby, and we actually looked at Vesta as it passed between the star at the base of the neck of Leo the Lion, Algeber, and the star quite close to it called 40 Loenus, and it literally was in line between the two, and so incredibly easy to pick up. During this month, it continues marching across the sky, across the sickle, up to the top right-hand star of the arc of the head of the lion, sometimes called the sickle. And if you go to the night sky page, I put a plot which might give you a chance to pick it out. It's the fifth brightest object within the sickle. There are only four stars brighter. So there's a good chance, even if you don't know quite which one it is, that you will actually see it if you just look with your binoculars around the sickle. I mentioned that Venus and Mercury are both appearing in the evening sky, and on the 31st of March, the last day, they're actually quite close. They're just 3.3 degrees apart, and you have to look about 30 minutes after sunset. In fact, they'll stay around that for the next week or so, and really right up to April the 4th, when they're just 3 degrees apart, you'll have a good chance of seeing them in the twilight sky. Binoculars will probably help to pick out Mercury, but if you've got a good low western horizon, Venus should be fairly easy to spot. The Hyades and the Pleiades cluster are well up after sunset. They're the two nearest open clusters to us. The Pleiades is one of the youngest open clusters and is dominated by blue stars, which are quite young. We think the Pleiades can't be more than about 100 million years old. None of them have yet evolved into what are called red giant stars. That actually helps to determine the age. It appears to be passing through what's called a reflection nebula, a cloud of dust which is scattering some of the blue light from the stars. So on photographs, it looks very, very nice. It's very hard to spot that, though, visually. You can make out a rather darker region where there isn't nebulosity, so you sort of see it in sort of in reverse. The closer Hyades cluster is older, does contain some evolved stars, red giants, but the thing that's prominent there is the star Aldebaran, the eye of Taurus the bull. It's actually not part of the Hyades cluster. It's about halfway between us and the cluster, and whereas all the cluster stars are moving sort of up a bit to the left, Aldebaran is actually moving down towards the south, lower down in the sky, so it's not part of it. You might just try with a small telescope to observe a white dwarf star this month. Again, not long after sunset, in the constellation of Eridanus, you find a star called Omicron 2, and that's sort of to the right of Rigel. And if you can pick that with binoculars, you may well be able to spot a white ninth magnitude companion, and that is a white dwarf. It's actually probably the easiest white dwarf to spot, given a pair of 8x40 or perhaps 10x50 binoculars. And again, I put a little chart on the night sky page to help you find it. And finally, I mentioned Sirius earlier. Below Sirius, about one binocular field below and a touch to the left, is a very nice open cluster called M41. Because it's low in the sky, we tend not to look at it very often, but it's well worth it because amongst all the blue stars, the bright blue stars in the cluster, there is in fact one very nice, prominent red giant star. It makes a very nice colour contrast. So, very easy to find. Just find Sirius with binoculars. Just drop gently downwards, about one field width. Perhaps if you have Sirius right at the top, you might see M41 at the very bottom of the field of view. Nice thing to look at. Okay, well, finally, let's say something, as I try to do now each month, for those that live in the southern hemisphere. After sunset, which is actually relatively early down in, let's say, South Africa, the Milky Way is running basically up from just to the left of due south. So if you look due south, a bit to the left, you'll see the Milky Way running up towards the zenith in the sky. And there's some very bright stars there. Not far from the horizon is Alpha Centauri, often called Rigel Kent. That's at sort of magnitude 0.01, so that's fairly bright. And with Beta Centauri, those are the pointers that point up to the Southern Cross, which is just above them to the left. If you move higher into the sky and a little bit to the right-hand side of due south, you come to the constellation of Carina, the Keel, part of what used to be called Argo Navis, and it's been split into two constellations, Vela the Sails and Carina the Keel. The Keel is the sort of the right-hand one. And the bright star at the top of that is the star Canopus. It's a very interesting star. It's an F-type giant star, yellowish, but basically it looks white. And because it's a very rare type, it's very hard to judge how bright it actually is, how much luminosity it has. However, when Hipparchus was able to measure the distances of stars using what's called the parallax method, it was finally discovered that it is about 310 light years away. And knowing how far away it is, knowing how bright it appears to it, its so-called apparent magnitude, you can work out its absolute brightness. And it's about 15,000 times brighter than our sun. It is, in fact, one of the brightest stars in the nearby part of our galaxy. And in fact, anywhere apart perhaps from our own sun, it might well be the brightest star in the sky. We see Sirius somewhat brighter, but that's because Sirius actually is very close to us. It's not nearly as bright as Canopus. One interesting use of Canopus, which in fact I had to mention when I was giving a talk about Mars last week, is it is very often used as a navigation beacon, in effect, for spacecraft travelling out through the solar system. The spacecraft are equipped with what are called Canopus star trackers, and they find Canopus, and they also find the sun, and the two give them their orientation, so they can align themselves correctly when, for example, they need to fire little bursts of their rockets to make a so-called mid-course correction. Just have a look at Canopus, 15,000 times brighter than our sun, a good bit bigger. In fact, if it were placed at the center of our solar system, it would extend three-quarters of the way to the orbit of Mercury. Well, happy hunting.